We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hi, everybody. Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and Facebook at Social Capital with Lori Hybe. All links will be found in the show notes. This week's guest is Corey Savage.
Corey Savage is a serial entrepreneur. In 2002, he started OwnMyPad.com. He's a partner in Soul Boxer Cocktail Company and founder and owner of Savage Solutions, a user-focused brand, digital, and social agency located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Wow, with all of those businesses, I'm really curious. How did you decide to go from owning one business to multiple businesses?
Well, it actually was not part of any plan. I kind of say that I'm the guy that doesn't have a lot of plans. Is Savage Solutions has been my bread and butter for the last 9 to 10 years, and really the conglomerate of all these new businesses were based on the fact that it would either be a product, a service, or something that I would truly believe in. And people started to come to us because in marketing, you're not just building brands, you have the opportunity to build businesses. And so from Soul Boxer to Galway Bay, as I've really surrounded myself with a big network of people, and the opportunities kind of just come to themselves. And there's nothing better and nothing worse than being the brand company behind a company that you also own. So when you think about it, as being in charge of your own brand is enlightening. And some people might say that that's the best project or the best client that you can have. And sometimes it can be detrimental too, but we're very excited about some of the things that we have coming to market with these new endeavors.
That's fantastic. And I can totally relate to that, because I know that when we take on our own branding efforts with Keystone Click, we're probably our own worst client. So I can definitely relate to that. All right. So, with all of these different businesses, obviously the bottom line is important. I'm really curious, how do you define your bottom line?
It's a question that was asked to me when I was 19 years old by a professor. And I didn't realize how much that question would actually be a guide for me in my life. And there's a lot of people that's bottom line is strictly driven by P&L, or driven by money, or driven by fame, or driven by prestige, or materialistic things. And I've always had... And I've always stuck to my gun is my bottom line is doing what you love with people that you love to work with, for people that love what you do, all while being able to spend as much time with your family as possible. So when I judge my bottom line, it's how much time I'm able to spend with my boys, how much time I'm able to devote to my family while doing something that is enjoyable every day. So I always tell people is make sure you know what your bottom line is before you choose your career path, because I see so many people chase the wrong things. And that's my advice to a lot of young people. And I speak to a lot of young people a lot of times. I say, it's not just about money. And you see all these people in social media with tons of everything, but happiness is hard to define too. So know what your bottom line is and work towards your bottom line. And that's the definition of success for me.
That's fantastic. I love it. You know, just doing what you love, and obviously working with the people that you enjoy working with, and for you, it's so that you have the time to spend with your family, and that's fantastic. Thank you so much for that. You know, in that first question, I asked you about the multiple businesses, and you commented about your network and how big your network is, and I would love to hear a story about your favorite or most successful networking experience that you've had.
So, knowing you were going to ask me that question, I thought about it because I have a lot of really interesting stories, but it still goes back to really one story. And I spent 8 years in corporate America in marketing. And I went from a marketing coordinator to a marketing director to the vice president of marketing for one of the largest healthcare companies in the world. And I was miserable the whole time because I knew early on in my life that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I look back and that corporate job actually led to the best networking event I could possibly have. And it's local to Wisconsin, and I'm not a Wisconsin guy, but I'm a Chicago kid who's turned into a Wisconsin person. I was at a Leroy Butler golf outing at Fire Ridge Golf Club with my dad. And the only reason I was there is because one of my friends owned a sports marketing company. I was in healthcare and I was in a job that allowed us to work with sports marketing people. And he paired us up with Don Beebe, who was a former Green Bay NFL wide receiver, one of the fastest guys to ever play in the NFL, and his brother, Dan Beebe. So it was me, my dad, Don, and Dan. And I was brought up to always treat people with respect. And every person that you meet is an opportunity. So we had this great day of golf, and I thought nothing of it other than, these are two guys that I want to stay in contact with. And Don had given me his contact information. So I made it purposeful to stay in contact with him. Granted, I'm a little bit older too, this is like the beginning of email. I would send him an occasional email saying, how are things going? And I knew that he had just started Don Beebe's House of Speed, which was a speed training facility in Aurora, Illinois. And he had mentioned while we were playing golf, hey, I want to franchise this business. While he was doing that, I actually was recruited out of a local healthcare company. I went to a national healthcare company, and I was working on the East Coast and in the Chicagoland area mainly. As he said, hey, I've got this idea. I want to franchise my company. Would you be willing to leave your high profile, high paying job in corporate America and come help us franchise our business? I said, sure. He goes, I can't pay you though. So I have a wife. We have our first kid on the way. And I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. That whole time that that story was going on, I was developing and designing websites on the side because my wife told me we didn't have enough money to afford a boat. So I wanted a boat. So I found it. I could cut grass forever. I could do all these odd jobs, but instead I designed websites. So when the opportunity arose, I went to my wife. I said, hey, I'd like to leave this new job. She goes, you've just been in this vice president job for 6 months and now you want to go work in our basement for nothing. I said, absolutely. And having her as my rock is the only reason I was able to do it, because she's got a really good job as well, is as I just decided to do it. So I left. I went in and told my CEO, hey, listen, I'm going to go do something for nothing. She thought I was nuts. And literally, we just started putting plans together and we rebranded Don Beebe's House of Speed. And we went from one franchise to 25 franchises in 6 months. It was one of the fastest growing franchise companies. Wow. And that was my first client. I was an inside person there, and it was all under the umbrella of Savage Solutions. And it really comes down to that relationship. And what came of it is, look, I took an opportunity of an event and I turned it into my first real customer. And from there, it was just a spiral effect. It was, hey, you've done a really good job with this. And we had franchise companies calling me. I was that perfect, almost freelancer that faked having office space when I was working at my office. I would do like a video call with a fake background. And I was outsourcing and freelancing project managers and designers and all this other kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it was something that I was really proud to do. And from there, I was able to hire my first employee who had to work in my basement. And then we finally started to move into office space. But Don and Dan have stayed really good friends throughout the years. And they're no longer a client of ours, but they decided to move into different endeavors. And now they're both coaching in the high school football ranks. So it's from a networking standpoint that led for me to meet a lot of really good people. And it's one of those stories is take advantage of every opportunity that you have.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I'm curious, from the time to that initial event where you had that initial introduction to this huge opportunity that was put in front of you, what was that time frame?
About almost 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, just under 2 years from the time that we had met to the time that I had decided to do it.
And just nurturing that relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not much effort, but it's just staying in front of them that turned this relationship into a massive opportunity that kind of was the stepping stone into where you are today. So that's a great story.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of uncertainty regarding the word networking. Like, people look at it as a work that needs to be done. But the reality of it is, it's not hard if you put just a tiny bit of effort behind it. And I always said is, I would stay in touch with people regardless of what the relationship might be. And I think too many people try to get immediate returns on networking and don't realize that networking is the big picture. It's a marathon. It is, you never know when that relationship's going to come back. That's why you don't want to turn any of those relationships off either, because you never know when that might come back and be something that you could gain from.
Yeah. So that's a good kind of bridge to my next question is, how do you go about staying in front of your network?
which is interesting. I don't have a game plan. I have this weird mantra of I don't network to gain business. And I think when people, especially younger generations, hear the word networking, they think to themselves, oh, I got to go to this event, or oh, I got to go do this, or oh, I need to be on. We call it being on at Savage. And the reality of it is my networking group is a mix of potential customers, friends, and competitors. So even just yesterday, I had lunch with a group that we compete on business for. And the reality of it is I think that that's really healthy. You never know when your competition or a like firm is going to be a resource for you, as well as there's a lot of good learnings if you're willing to share. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be trade secrets or anything else, but I think people think I'm nuts when I say that I actually talk to our competition, because I think I can learn a lot more from them than I can from a potential business deal.
Yeah, no, I totally appreciate that and agree with that statement. And I mean, not only there's that statement, you know, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. But it's, as an entrepreneur, I love to learn. And I think, you know, put yourself next to those that you want to be like and aspire to be. So I love that statement. All right. So you did talk about kind of that younger generation or some of the, I guess, millennials that are afraid of networking. What advice would you offer to that aspiring business professional who's looking to grow their network?
Well, and I own a business that Savage Solutions has a lot of the younger generation, or as they're termed, millennials, which some people use as a bad word. I actually use it as a good word. Is my advice always to them is you have to step out of your comfort zone. And to be a well-rounded person, you're going to have to find a way to figure out how to make those starter conversations. You're going to have to figure out how to work a room, because you never know when you're going to be in that situation for yourself. It might not even be while you're employed for me, but might be while you're employed for yourself. It might be while you're employed for somebody else. And it's not easy. I tell them it's not easy, but there's a lot of really good things that you can do. Pick small wins. One small win, attend an event. Just attend one. You don't have to talk to anybody. Sit in the back of the room and watch how other people do it. And then I'm big on the buddy system. I'm big on everybody should go with somebody else. We even do events for our clients where we promote not RSVPs of one person, but hey, bring a buddy, because you're more likely to go something if you can bring somebody else. So networking in groups is a lot easier than networking by yourself. I don't expect my team to sell our business either. So I'm a big believer in networking for sale is a bad form of networking. If you're out trying to generate business at a networking event, there's probably a reason for that. And I always tell people is your work and your brand should sell your business for you. Is if you're out trying to drum up business, and in your initial, let's say, cold interaction with networking is, let me tell you about my business, because that's what all these networking experts tell you to do.
Sure.
I think people are just turned off by it.
Yep.
Like you and I were talking before we started the podcast of breaking the ice and the difference between hard selling and soft selling is no one wants to be hard sold anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Is I have a big problem when I go to an event and somebody sees me and there's somebody that could sell me something and they're like, hey, Corey Savage, I wanted to meet you for such a long time. We have this great, and I'm like, oh boy, here we go. It's a matter of let me know something about you that we might have in common so we can build on a relationship. Because people buy people,
yes,
as much as they buy anything else.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I'm a huge fan of the buddy system.
Me too.
Especially when you're attending a new event or something that, you know, maybe looks a little intimidating, isn't your typical crowd. It's always good to just have that buddy system to lean on. Great. That's a good tie into my next question here. So we've talked a lot about traditional networking, and you and I have this common ground where we're digital experts. So digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you prefer?
I actually prefer digital. I think digital is a great lead into things too, because here's why. I was just at a place today where the first sentence out of this lady's mouth was, I saw on Facebook that you're doing, and it breaks the ice. So I think that there is a great tie between digital and traditional. I've been told by a lot of people that I'm a Facebook junkie, and I use Facebook to build my life portfolio, so I don't have to keep a scrapbook. But it's amazing how many business people have said, hey, I notice you're doing this with, it could be Soulboxer, it could be when we were working on bubbler bike stuff, it could be anything that we do. And it's a great way to break the ice of, hey, so how's that going? Mm-hmm. Or what are you doing with this? And even this morning, I was on a phone call with another agency in Detroit, just asking about job titling and job positioning, because he had seen me, I had posted an article that I was reading. He's like, hey, I noticed you're reading that article. It's almost creepy, but it's a great way. So if you think about it from that standpoint, I started digitally and then we picked up the phone and he'll be visiting us in January to have traditional networking. So I'm a big believer in all of it. I just think digital is easier and people tend to gravitate towards things that are easier.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think it helps with that nurturing. Like you said, you're emailing someone, you know, and it's just easy to shoot that email off as opposed to picking up the phone and calling or trying to schedule that face-to-face meeting. It's just good to kind of support someone digitally. So
Lori, what's our most valuable resource? It's time. And traditional networking is a lot of time. Digital networking is a lot less time. And it's an effort. It's a physical effort. So the other thing I always talk about digital and traditional networking, if you want to talk about being at a physical networking event or at something that you network at, is there's a lot that goes into being traditional. One, you have to worry about how you look. You have to worry about how you smell. You have to worry about all those things. Digitally, you can do it in your pajamas. And it's you can do it at any time. Traditional networking usually revolves around a set time at something to do that might not fit within what your time value is for that day, because there's so many different things that you want to do. And if you want to have any kind of personal life out of work, how do you fit everything in? Because a lot of traditional networking events fall after hours. Mm-hmm. So digitally seems to be where I gravitate towards. And I don't do it on purpose. I just pay attention.
Yeah. And that makes sense. Obviously, if, you know, your most important, the most important thing to you is your family. Mm-hmm. And after hours is family time. So that absolutely makes sense. I love it. I love your breakdown of this. And I'm saying that because the other guests that we've had on have all leaned towards traditional. So I love that you went the digital route. Okay, let's switch the questions to a couple more fun ones here. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Less of, I would say being less of a prick. I would say, and I have a lot of these people in my inner circle, people that work for me too, is I thought I knew everything and I didn't realize that I didn't until I got into the position that I'm in now. So humility would be something that I would do. I'd be a lot more humble and a lot more honest, because most entrepreneurs are type A people. I never want to lose at anything, and you never want to compete against me. I know it's one of those things that I don't want to lose at anything. Is I always felt that I had to talk a bigger game and showcase our company in a different way than it actually was, just to prove that, hey, we're this, even though we weren't. And I learned a lot of hard lessons that way. So being humble and being a sponge to learnings is ever since we had this paradigm shift inside of our company of, We don't outsource anything. We don't white label anything. We don't do anything. Like, we are completely transparent in the way that we do business. Our business has tripled in size and tripled in revenue. And that was the biggest learning that I've had, is if you are a little bit more humble and say, we can only do this, but we do this really well, instead of saying, oh yeah, we can do that too. Because as an entrepreneur too, you need to make money. So you try to find every revenue stream that you can, but if it's a revenue stream that's going to be catastrophic for you, stick away from it. So I didn't know that stuff when I was younger. I knew I was going to be an entrepreneur at six, but there's entrepreneur schools, but there's no entrepreneur school when I was starting my business. So I figured it out as I went along. And I would just tell myself to be nice to everybody. I wasn't the nicest person in my 20s because I was driven to be successful in terms of money. I wanted to make a lot of money. And I probably turned a lot of people off, and I probably pushed a lot of people the wrong way because I wanted to climb the ladder so fast. And I did. And then when you get to near the top of the ladder, you realize, oh my gosh, I'm going to need all those people as I go back down that ladder. So I'd say there's a lot of things I would tell that person. But when I was 20 years old, I made a list of 20 things I want to do in life, and I'm down to two left.
Oh.
So I'm proud of what I have accomplished, but from a character standpoint, there's a lot of improvement that I could have done for myself.
Do you mind sharing what those last two are?
Well, one of them is go to Australia. So some people call them bucket lists. Is I had things down to, I knew what kind of person I wanted to marry and married that person. I even put, I wanted to have two boys and live in the exact house that I'm living in, exactly where I live in it, and a bunch of other things. I wanted to own a business with a building in a downtown artsy area, which we do. And I wanted to start my own charity. And that, so the one I have left is I haven't started anything from a philanthropic standpoint. And I think it's not about giving back money too. It's about, I would love to have some kind of foundation, because I think there's so many areas to help and there's a lot of foundations doing really good work. There's not a foundation that has the exact same beliefs on what I want to help with. So that's the two that I have left.
Well, keep us in the loop with regards to this charity and foundation. I'm really interested in learning more about that. And Australia is on my bucket list, but I'm pretty sure we had that conversation.
Yeah, we did.
Okay. So we've all heard of the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you can do it within the 7th degree?
Okay. I knew you were going to ask me this question. So I couldn't limit it to one person, so I'm going to have to throw two at you.
Okay.
The first one would be Aaron Shapiro, who owns the agency Huge in Brooklyn. And his story is intriguing because, one, I think he's a very similar person to me. I've read his book. I follow their agency in great detail. I think they've done great things. But he started in his basement. Then he had 4 people in his basement. Now he's one of the most sought-after digital agencies in the world, and he's built a culture of believers, and he has never really let anybody down. His clients love him, his employees love him. It seems to be a great place to work. The other one, which is Gary Vaynerchuk, and everybody says Gary V. The only reason I want to meet Gary V is I want to know if he's doing all this stuff just to buy the New York Jets, because he's such a salesman and he's done a great job of selling his own brand. And sometimes he contradicts himself of saying, I'm doing this all for X, and then the next day he'll say for Z, and then Y. And I just watched him on a podcast the other day talking about the difference between branding and selling. And he's got, 12 websites all about him. He very rarely talks about VaynerMedia, but I know that that's where he's making a lot of his money, as well as speaking engagements and an investment company. I just want to ask him point blank, is he doing all of this to truly buy the New York Jets? And if he is, I want to commend him on the way that he did it, because that's the most unique way to build wealth. So he's definitely somebody that I'd like to meet, because I think he'd be open and honest with me with all the questions I want to ask him too.
I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. He's responded to a couple of my Facebook Live.
The Ask Gary V stuff.
Yes, yeah. I always seem to get him at the right time too. but it's just cool, because I think if I saw him in public, I'd probably ask him that question.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we'll throw this on Twitter and see if he responds. Okay.
Somebody needs to buy them because they are a horrible franchise.
All right. So as I mentioned earlier, as an entrepreneur, I love learning. And one of the ways I do that is by reading books. And I'm always curious what books are other entrepreneurs reading. So do you have anything on your reading list right now?
So I just started Shoe Blood. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's Phil Knight's new book.
Okay.
From Nike. And I'm reading Ask Gary Vee.
Yep.
but the problem with me right now is I have a problem when I start a book, I can't stop reading it. And it's also planning for 2017. So if I get into a book, I tend to really get into a book. So those are the two books that are sitting on my nightstand right now. And I knew I should have gotten them as audiobooks because I'd probably have them done by now.
Yeah, I love audiobooks. And I usually listen to them at 1.5 speed too.
Yes, exactly.
A lot faster. All right. So any final words or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Just everybody is a resource. And I always tell people that if you, and you hear so many of this cliche statement, if you believe that you can do it, you can do it. And even Gary Vee talks about it as it's about the hustle and it's about everything else. But I'm not the smartest person in the world. And I think I've built a successful business. I think I'm building a couple more successful businesses. Be true to yourself and be true to your brands and be true to the people that you work with, and anything can happen. And surprisingly, you can actually have a lot of fun along the way. And what's better than making money, having fun with people that you like to do both of those things with while still being able to spend as much time as I do with my family, I think that that's priceless. So I feel blessed in everything that I've accomplished, and I have a lot more that I want to do, but it's not impossible. So make sure you know what you want to do though. Some other advice I give to people is don't be an entrepreneur to be an entrepreneur. Do something that you love, because I think a lot of people fail because they just want to own a business and make a lot of money. And that's not truly what it's all about.
That's great advice for sure. And I love that. Be true to yourself, be true to your brand, and be true to the people that are working for you. That's great. So Corey, if anyone was interested in getting contact with you, what would be the best way that they can reach you?
The best way would probably just, if you want to see a little bit about what we're doing, you can go to Savage Solutions. I think it's SavageSolutionsLLC.com. I am on Facebook. I am not, as my team calls it, on the Snap or on the Gram. but you can LinkedIn with, you can link with me, you can do all that. But I think the best way is just go to the contact page of Savage Solutions LLC.
All right. And we'll include that information in the show notes. All right. So Corey, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thanks, Lori.
This was a lot of fun. Great stories to share. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Corey Savage for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, please send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.